It's a great honor to be here today to celebrate the life of Barry Corbett. And it's wonderful to address this gathering. You all represent a really interesting clump of humanity. We're all drawn here because Barry touched our lives in ways that really mattered. And we will share today some of these special memories. Many of you I know, and many of you I'm hoping to know.
Can you speak a little louder?
Oh, let me lean a little closer. How's that? A little better?
Yeah.
So many of you I know, and many more I hope to know. But we're all a sort of kindred spirit, if you will. And it's really because Barry didn't attract people into his life that he wouldn't have wanted us to be around. And for that discretion, I thank you, Barry. This place, Mount Vernon Country Club, is quite familiar to me. I worked here in high school. And this was a long time ago, before the interstate highway came up the road. And before there were so many houses, there are many, many more houses up here now. And of course, Mother Cabrini's shrine was there. And Buffalo Bill was still buried over the side of the hill. And I know a lot of people from Wyoming would like to come get him back, but he's not going anywhere. And Barry would settle on his little mountaintop, not too long after my stint here, but it would be another 15 years before I'd show up at his doorstep with my book of pitch. I think it was about 1983. We're a little vague about time when we look back at these things. I can't really remember when that was, but I think it was in the springtime of 83. I looked up Barry, hoping to attract some validity to an idea I had to make a sort of whole earth, anatomy is not destiny, life is dear, choice is good catalog for people with paralysis. I didn't know jack about neurotrauma, or Everest, or Jackson Hole, or anything about Barry Corbett, but I had read some of his writing, and wow. You all know what I'm saying. The guy could really turn it. He could really make you understand what he was talking about. So I thought, well, if this guy goes for it, maybe I've got a chance. Maybe this thing's got a chance. So he didn't chase me off the place. And later, Barry agreed to add his voice, sort of the gimp eye for the AB guy, to what we called Spinal Network. And I trusted his experience. After all, he'd already done options, and he'd done a couple of the classic rehab movies that were in circulation. And he trusted later what he described as my roguish charm. So it was the beginning of a really beautiful friendship. We spent many an afternoon at Barry's kitchen table, the gorgeous front range of the Rockies in the background to the west, the Rocky Flats bomb factory on the plains below to the north. And we might have shared a glass or two of gin. We spent the timing couldn't have been better. Barry's life was ready for a change. His shoulders were already starting to go. He didn't want to get too far from home. And he no longer wanted to do the heavy lifting that came along with being a filmmaker. And a couple other forces lined up for us, too. Craig Hospital, less than an hour away, liked my idea, and they adored Barry, and therefore their support was total. The Mac computer and desktop publishing came along. Some money came into the picture, and it took a lot longer than we thought it would. But Spinal Network emerged much richer and meaningful than it had been planned. It was full of life, and it was well used by thousands of new gimps, but by many who had been around and identified with our version of what Barry called stubborn fortitude. My little staff and I had an office in Boulder above the Walrus Bar. We called the place The Spine. We sold a lot of books, but none of us really wanted to be bookmongers. So out of The Spine sprung a magazine, what would become New Mobility. This would have been about 1989. It was a great time to put out a magazine about the disability community. There were other publications at the time, one of the leading ones having been around since the polio epidemics of the 1950s, very resource-oriented and sort of cheerfully handicapped, but basically pretty stale. It left a lot for us to work with. The main difference between what we did and others was the premium we placed on the well-turned phrase. We swore off tragedy while making information entertaining. And the stories to be told at that time, I urged my little gum-popping cadre of writers to affect this sort of attitude, to look into things like Denver gimps were chaining themselves to buses. I don't know if you remember this. This was cool. Paraplegics were going to Russia for enzyme therapies to try to reduce the scar in their injury site. Jack Kevorkian was suddenly showed up, wanting to take out his first person with a disability. The first drugs had come on the market for erectile dysfunction. This was a big story in the spinal injury community. Super Crips were climbing rock faces using their arms. The first woman in a wheelchair took her clothes off for Playboy magazine. This was all happening in the 80s. And no one had ever seen the rude but hilarious work of cartoonist John Callahan, quadriplegic. He had just arrived on the scene. So what a great time it was for us. The independent living movement was spreading. The seeds of the ADA had already been sown in just a few more years, and that would be signed into law. And best of all, people living with disabilities were becoming aware of their community, and they were starved to learn more about themselves. Now, it sounds easy, but even with all these cultural ingredients, the thing hardly self-ignited. The physical disability realm is about as downscale a market as you can find in this country. So the book kept selling, so we kept the magazine going as long as the book kept selling. Well, the book finally ran out of its currency. It had to be redone into a second edition. The second edition cost a lot of money, and because of that, there wasn't enough money to prop up the magazine anymore. Meanwhile, Barry had become the editor. Forgot to mention that he became the editor. But anyway, we almost self-destructed the whole enterprise. And as a last resort, I sent out an SOS postcard to the readership, and I said, look, I've beached this thing. Is there anybody out there who has an idea how we might be able to get it back going again? Let me know. I got a phone call a short while later from a West Coast publishing company. And would I care to visit and discuss how they might help? Well, cutting to the chase, this company called Miramar Publications bought New Mobility and Spinal Network and me. Gene Dobbs, my former student intern at the Spine, came out to California and convinced Miramar that she was the right person to be the managing editor, and so they hired Jean. And Jean has become the rock of New Mobility, and she's been there ever since, and she's now the executive editor of the company that publishes New Mobility. So kudos to Jean for sticking with it. And that was 11 years ago. Jean and I moved to Los Angeles, near Los Angeles, to be part of this company. And the new Mobility emerged. This time all slicked up on glossy paper, and we had Ellen Stoll. This is the woman who was in Playboy. She was on our cover. It's sort of celebrating the 7-year itch. Anyway, Gene and I got used to having the bills paid, and we're grateful the Miramar people kept the micromanagement to a minimum. And soon we convinced them to make Barry the editor again. This wasn't easy, because they're thinking, well, I'm paying you, and I'm paying Gene, and I'm going to pay Barry too? Yeah, you need to. You need to. And they did. And they hired Barry, and they got him a really cool Macintosh computer, and they got him set up and paid him as grandly as they could, and thus began the golden age of the magazine. Barry really defined it, and the bully pulpits rang out. And hand in glove with Gene and a crack stable of freelancers who all benefited by the deft editing hand of Barry, the magazine was headed towards greatness. And Barry says that this was his best gig ever, something that he'd rehearsed and practiced his whole life for, and his heart was fully in it. There's no question about it. Well, as you all have read on the the body of work lined up on BarryCorbin.com, and thank you for doing that. I mean it. It was really helpful to have that information, especially the photographs, and I'll echo that comment that we all learned so much more about Barry than we knew from our own experience with him, and it's been a wonderful thing to have that resource. And as you've read the material that's on that site, you know that Barry did not immediately come to embrace the concept of GIMP culture. At New Mobility, however, he relished the opportunity to shape it. You don't have to read much between the lines to see how he unified his life before and after his injury. When we surrender our beliefs about how life ought to be, we can learn to love it as it is, he wrote. Here's another quote. Once we fully understand how universal is this fear of otherness, and that it is truly fear and not hate, then we can learn to touch people in the face of their anxieties. Quite suddenly, we are free to discover the kindness of strangers. Quite suddenly, strangers are free to discover us. This is a gift we have to give. If I had to describe Barry in a single word, go ahead and try this, and I'll tell you, we would come up with an amazing bouquet of attributes if we all did this. But my word is unconditional. He was dealt his hand, and he played it without excuses, without regret or resistance. He accepted imperfection and disagreement. He understood that the contrast of our times did not lessen his appreciation for the sweetness of life. Live and let live, no conditions. A parallel trick of living with a disability, he wrote, is to see all and everything as an adventure, one that endows every moment with all the most adventuresome qualities: uncertainty and risk, richness and joy, deliberation and daring do. Now, I've thought about the question of legacy. What has been left behind might inform and soothe us. For Barry, there's the written work, of course. There's our own memories and our experiences we've shared together. But there's something greater, and it's right here in this room. Barry wasn't a real sentimental guy. In fact, he was completely unsentimental. It's more than anybody I've ever met. But you can see in the photos on the website that the happiest shots have a grandkid in them. Barry's children, John, Jen, and Michael, and the grandchildren, Michaela, Julia, Katrin, and James, you are the true legacy of the man we celebrate today. So to you children, may you live without fear, live without placing conditions on what living well ought to be. I want to read a poem. It's a little longer than I'd hoped. It didn't seem long when I first picked it, but it won't take too long. It's just, I want to read this for you though. And this is for the children in us all. It's called Momentous Reality. The next century, the next millennium, is being made now, today, each second. We could be working towards world peace, living as one spirit, or we could be working towards disaster, chemical and nuclear wars. The harmony and existence of the future depends on the harmony and existence of each individual here today. We must be brave going into the future. We must remember to play after each storm. We must not live in fear of bad things blocking our way or overcoming our optimism. If we can work together to face the future, if we can unite as one, then our future will look and be very bright. Even though the future seems far away, it's actually beginning right now. And while we're living in the present, we must celebrate life every day, knowing that we're becoming history with every word, every action, every moment. Because we today are the history of tomorrow. We must ask ourselves each day what we are doing that may have an influence on the future. It really won't be for many years that the future will indicate if something we said or something we did or did not do had an impact on a single individual, or if it trickled out to touch the whole world. That was written by Matty Stepanek. He was 10 years old when he wrote it. Matty died last summer. He was 14 years old. Three of the most amazing Crips ever died last year. Barry and Matty and Christopher Reeve. Now, I know I'm not the only one who thought this about Christopher Reeve. Why couldn't he have waited a little bit longer to let Barry pass without all the distraction? But for me, the deaths of Barry and Chris are difficult to separate. I work for the Reeve Foundation, and I've gotten to know Chris Reeve a little bit. I didn't know him nearly as well as I knew Barry, but I got to know him well enough to know what a true man he was. Anyway, Reeve had died by the time I last saw Barry in October. Gene and I flew out from LA to say goodbye. We've both written about this remarkable experience. But to say the least, it was brutally final. Barry was in bed since he couldn't sit long periods of time. The do not resuscitate sign, handwritten, hung above his head. He said, forget about any Fridays with Barry narrative. I held his hand, exchanged a few words that didn't really match the moment's emotional pitch. We locked eyes, mine were wet, and that was it. The next day, I caught a 6 o'clock flight to New York for a send-off that they were holding for Christopher Reeve. It was a celebration, sort of like this one, only we don't have Robin Williams, some other celebrities to make us laugh and cry, but it was the same sort of feeling. Reeves was also close to the 2004 election, and so it was a little bit politicized. Hillary Clinton was there with Teresa, Carey, so you get the picture. In the end, it helped us more fully know the man and to process the loss. It reminded us to focus on the here and now and to know that one life can make a difference. Now, I hope as we all return home today, we're less sad and more hopeful, knowing Barry enriched our lives and made the planet a better place. Barry made a profound difference in my life. And I know this is true for so many of you here and so many more people who knew Barry and never even met him. I want to leave you with one more short poem from Matty. It's called Future Reminiscing. It's good to have a past that is pleasant to reflect upon. Take care to create such a gift for your future. Thank you, Barry Corbett, for your gift to me.